this is Angela Middleton, and welcome to my podcast called I Want to BA. The reason for this podcast is that there is a huge lack of careers advice in the UK, and I'm always asked by young people, by parents and by teachers, my views on improving careers advice, and particularly by parents, what should they say to their youngster who's leaving school. I think it is a wider subject. It's not just about what job do you want to do, but it is actually about how you want your life to be. And within that, what type of career you want to select. And that career can just be the first stepping stone. Nowadays, individuals have a whole portfolio of careers. The people that I've interviewed, even at the age of 30, have had four or five careers. Myself, I've had at least five different types of careers. So this podcast is about firstly talking about careers in general and careers advice, but secondly, bringing in individuals who have experienced careers in particular industries, hence the subject I Want to BA, and they can come and talk about the path that they took to actually get to where they are, and also talk about what it's like to actually do that job and have that career. So we'll be covering every type of career that we can think of in the UK, and it will be everything from architects to zoologists. So I'll look forward to comments, and we'll build things up as we go along, and hopefully it should be of great use to parents, to teachers and to young people. So today I'm joined by Mike G. Mike is a fuel scientist, so it's really great to be able to talk to Mike because I've never actually met a scientist before. So Mike, thanks so much for joining us, and I would love to start by hearing a summary of your background from when you were at school to where you are now.
Sure. So I grew up in the northwest of the UK. I went to a mixed state school called Helsby High School. And
big school, small school?
Yeah, big school, lots of students, and had an attached sort of sixth form college onto that as well. So that's where I did my my A levels.
And how were you when you were at school? What things are you interested in? And
I was very interested in cricket. So vice captain of the cricket team. Also really keen on climbing and everything, and being outdoors. Lots of sporting stuff going on in school and outside of that. Quite studious and worked hard in my classes. Yeah, loved science and geography, those kind of subjects.
So you had this love of fixing things, making things, this inquisitiveness, but did you know what you wanted to do whilst you were at school?
No, not at all. I didn't go to university wanting the degree so that I could get this job at Shell. In fact, I still don't necessarily know what I want to do. I just know that I enjoy the technical challenges of my job on a day-to-day, but there's still plenty of things that I could move into in the future. I think at University of Sheffield, it's 55% of chemistry graduates carry on and use their degree in a related industry, and 45% go and do something completely different. So they might be banking, yeah, accountancy, or anything else, yeah.
So what that says really is that, you know, if you feel like you are inspired by this and you want to be a scientist, and then you go and do a chemistry degree, and then you decide you don't want to, it really doesn't matter. Because when we're making a decision about what we want to do, it really is only for that next step, isn't it? And then, you know, as in your case, Mike, you know, you've achieved what you have in terms of sort of senior scientist, project manager. But there are so many different directions you could still go. You're only 29, and I'm sure that you will probably pursue a number of those in the future. So I think that's a key message, really, is that, you know, you follow what you love doing, knowing that it is going to lead you to an important next step, and you've always got the opportunity to make a decision, you know, whether you're 15, as some of you are listening now, and again at 20 and at 25 and at 30. This is something that's happening right the way through our life. So when you chose your A-levels, it was with that type of enjoyment in mind, was it?
Yeah, exactly. The subjects that I chose were ones that challenged me, but also I found really interesting. So, I did biology, chemistry, geography and an AS level in maths as well.
And while you were at school, did you do any work experience?
Yeah, I had a couple of sort of like mini placements just to see what it was like to work in different places. I actually did a summer placement in British Nuclear Fuels just to get an idea of what that was all like.
How did you get that job?
A notice was sent around at school basically saying, does anybody want to do the Gold Crest Award and get some experience over the summer? So it was as simple as that, really.
And how many of you decided to do that?
Only a couple. Most people wanted their summer.
Okay. Interesting that, you know, that's a little example there of sort of grabbing opportunities, isn't it, when they come up, because that obviously would have shaped your interest further.
Exactly.
And what other work experience? Did you do anything else?
So I had a couple of part-time jobs as well. At the weekends, I started by working in Chester Library as a librarian. That was just to earn some money, really.
So that wasn't out of interest, that was more to earn some money.
Exactly. Yeah. I don't think there's that many people that would be really keen on on spending lots of time in a quiet library working there. But yeah, it gave me some pocket money and gave me the opportunity to get some early work experience, really. Yeah.
And I suppose, you know, you were interacting with public then and things like that.
Yeah, exactly. It was very customer focused. Everybody was coming in either wanting to find books or having problems. So you were constantly problem solving. And
And any other work experience at all?
So then I started working as a climbing instructor at my local climbing wall. I was really into climbing and spent a lot of time at the wall, and they were looking for people to organise the kids' clubs at the weekend, basically, and look after the kids that came every weekend. And that sort of developed into a bit more of a climbing instructor role, teaching people how to climb and setting routes at the climbing wall, sort of running the climbing wall a bit more on a day-to-day basis.
That's a nice example of following your hobbies and actually in that way ending up with the opportunity to do more of it and actually even getting paid for it, isn't it?
Absolutely. I got free climbing at the climbing wall, so it was a big plus, and I ended up getting paid to do something that I was there 3 or 4 times a week, so might as well get paid for it too.
Yeah. So you did your A levels, and then what happened?
So after I finished my A levels, I took a year out. I had a placement at university, but I decided that I wanted to get some more experience of the world of work.
And why was that?
Number one, I didn't necessarily want to go to university straight away. I wanted a break between finishing A levels and starting the next level of study. And also, I did want to find out a bit more about working in industry. It seemed like a good idea at the time. A couple of people recommended me to just try it out, really.
But you were clear on what you wanted to do at university, were you?
Yeah, from probably GCSEs, I was really keen on chemistry, and so thought that I would do chemistry at university, I think. My chemistry teacher really put me onto that. He said I was good at it and had I considered it. So I was like, yep.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. So, yeah, sometimes someone can say that and give you that extra confidence, can't they?
Exactly.
And help you sort of select a direction. So what did you do in your year out before starting uni?
So I went to work for Shell. It was the local industry near where I lived. But I was working in the lubricants department there. I started working on the data analysis and collating lots of data for the lubricants technical support team to provide advice for their advisors all around the world on technical questions for lubricants.
So this
products.
Was, at this point, it wasn't what we would envisage as a scientist role. You weren't walking around in a white sort of lab coat. You were doing more data analysis. So what happened, you know, how did you sort of move to sort of more of the lab-based work?
Yeah, so obviously it was just good to get a job and get some understanding of how the lubricants department worked, but I did want to have some more hands-on experience. I was going to university that September, so I did ask and really pushed for a real lab project, and I was rewarded with that. I ended up working with a great, slightly mad scientist that he just gave me free rein and said, this is a cool project, work out how you're going to do it. What do you need? What materials, what chemicals? Off you go, really.
Wow. Yeah. So that's a good example of when you want to do something and you see an opportunity to ask for it. So you went then on to university and completed your degree. Did you do any other work experience during that time?
Yeah, so my degree was a master's in chemistry with a year in industry, so a sandwich course. So in my third year, we were all trying to get jobs. My original intention was to get a role in a different part of the industry, probably like the pharmaceutical industry. I was applying to lots of places, but there weren't that many opportunities at the time. It was quite hard for anybody on my course really to get roles. A lot less people did than previous years. Mm. So I applied to Shell again as a sort of backup. I'd been there before and I knew what it was like, and they offered me another role. Probably because I'd been there previously, so they knew of me. So I did another placement year in Shell in the lubricants department again, but working on a very different thing.
So while you were doing that sort of next year's worth of internship, give us a sort of a flavour of the types of things you were working on. And I know it's terribly sort of, you know, complex and detailed for those of us who are not scientists, but, you know, could you explain it sort of in layman's terms?
Yeah, so there are standard test methods that the industry uses to define the interval with which you need to change the oil in your car. And my project was trying to work out whether those standard test methods were reliable or not, and whether they needed updating, whether it was still right to sort of strictly define the oil drain interval based on these few tests, or whether there was something else that we could use instead.
Cool. And then you went back to uni?
Yep, went back to university to finish off my studies, do my master's project, and catch up on all of the lectures that I'd missed during my placement year. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, that was, again, 9 to 6 in the lab, pretty intense, lots of studying and working on some pretty complex chemistry.
And can you tell us anything about what, you know, a big picture, what you worked on there?
Yeah, in my master's year, I was working with explosive chemistry, and it was really annoying because it was all very shock sensitive, very air sensitive. You needed to perform a reaction over a number of weeks, and if you exposed it to air, then it would all decompose and you'd have to start again.
Wow. And how did you do with your master's?
I did very well. I managed to get a first.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
And what would you put that down to?
Grit and determination. Yeah. I think I worked for 8 weeks and then the reaction went wrong, and so I had to start again just before Christmas. So it was definitely frustrating at times, but ultimately really rewarding.
So fast forward to where you are now, and your title is a fuel scientist. Yes. And I know that, you know, you having done that for sort of a period of 5 years, that you've now reached the point where you're actually managing projects as well. But could you give us an overview of your current role, the sorts of things you get up to on a day-to-day basis?
Yeah, sure. So I work in the fuels department. The idea is that we're coming up with new additives for Shell's fuel products that they sell on the forecourt. I work in innovation, which is coming up with the concept of a new additive, doing some initial testing to prove that that could work, with the intention after a couple of years of handing that over to development. They can run all of the tests that can provide us with marketing data, and then we can start selling that product.
So does that mean you're sort of less hands-on in terms of being in the lab and things now?
Yeah, unfortunately I don't spend any time in the lab now. I'm more managing projects.
So what sorts of things are you doing?
To get a fuel additive, you need to do a lot of tests on it. So we do engine testing. We test vehicles on rolling roads just to simulate how the fuel would actually be used in real life. So it's a lot of designing tests that will be able to show us the benefit that we want from the additives that we've put in.
And where do these tests all take place?
So we've got a site in Hamburg in Germany. Also, I've worked with universities in the UK and other third parties as well, mostly based in the UK.
So yeah. Do you travel around? Or?
Yeah, quite a lot of travelling. I have to visit the projects quite regularly. I have lots of meetings to work out progress and everything like that. And probably in Germany a couple of times a year as well.
And data, presentations, emails, things like that, is that what you're spending time on as well?
Pretty much, yeah. A lot of number crunching again, but it's a lot easier now that I'm actually working on the projects myself, and I know the work that's gone into actually producing that data. But yeah, it's doing a lot of data analysis to end up with a presentation that you can present to the senior management, basically.
So what do you love about the role?
I like working on technical challenges, basically. So trying to work something out based on you can start with pretty much nothing, and you do a lot of testing, and you start to understand what's going on.
And I suppose for taking that all the way through, once you do this sort of research and you come up with an answer, I mean, that's pretty valuable to the company you're working for, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly. The Shell V-Power that we're working on is the number one performance premium fuel in the UK.
Right.
So it's quite cool to see all the billboards and everything and know that that's what you've been working
on. That's fantastic.
Yeah.
What's the biggest challenges?
For me, it's time management. I've usually got a lot of balls in the air all at once. So trying to keep everything running is sometimes quite hard. You've got to manage the difference between like your really important and quick tasks that you need to do right there and then, and the more long-term things. You've got to get everything written up and concluded completely and recorded so that you can reference it again in the future. So
I can imagine, yeah, that's the least, well, for some people, that would be the less exciting part of it, writing that all up officially and recording it and everything.
Writing reports isn't that exciting.
But it's got to be done.
It's got
to
be done.
What makes you successful in this role? What sorts of attributes are necessary, do you think?
I think it's really important to be inquisitive and try and work out why something's happening. You need to be constantly questioning what's going on and being innovative, coming up with new ideas, floating things that sound stupid and crazy, but every now and then it's actually what's going on. So you do have free rein to come up with some crazy ideas and see them through, basically. Yeah.
What about personal attributes?
You've got to be confident in your own decisions, and really you're having to sell your idea to the senior management. You've got to convince them that you are correct in your assumptions. You've got to be focused on delivering to deadlines and things like that, but also getting to the right conclusion, really. Yeah, you've got to want it, and you've got to be patient too, because it doesn't happen instantaneously.
The answer doesn't just come after the first experiment.
No, it comes like just as you're about to fall asleep, sort of thing, and you suddenly realise that you're just like, oh, I need to make a note of that, but or else I'll forget by tomorrow.
Yeah.
So our projects are usually a year or even longer. So you've got a lot of planning that goes into it and a lot of testing that occurs. And as well, everything doesn't always work out as you expect it. So
patience is key.
Setbacks and, things didn't work out right. What do we do now? How do we change things? How do we look
at
it?
And that's really comes back to being inquisitive again and constantly pushing forward, isn't it?
Exactly.
You just never know when the answer's around the corner.
Yeah.
What could this lead to? I mean, what other paths are there once you've being a scientist and in your field, what sorts of other things could you move on to next?
Well, so I could just sort of carry on climbing the ladder in my own department. I could start managing more projects, so being senior project leader, that kind of thing. I could start managing people, be a line manager. I could also move into another part of Shell. So I could move into the business side of things and work more on the sales and marketing, that kind of thing. And it's really useful to have had the sort of technology beginning, because you understand the ins and outs of the products. You can apply that and you know how it works from that angle. You then just have to learn sales and marketing.
Yeah.
You can move quite easily into the sales and marketing, but it's very hard for somebody from sales and marketing to move into the
other
technical
way around.
Side.
So
another thing I'm really interested in is renewables. It's becoming more and more of an important topic at the moment, with oil prices and everything like that, and climate change and this sort of thing. So it's something that I would be really interested in moving into in the future. A lot of the things that I've learned in this role would be directly applicable there.
Yeah.
But as well, there's plenty of different things that I could go into. My chemistry teacher way back when in high school had worked in industry and then had come back to do teaching, and he was the guy that started me on this, so I've always considered that as potentially an option too. And there's plenty of other things too. I could go into consultancy, either environmental or consulting on very similar things to what I'm currently doing. Yeah.
And you were saying that there are scientists in so many different types of industries, because obviously we've been talking about the fuel industry, but you mentioned cosmetics, household equipment like Dyson. And
yeah.
So when you start to think about it, there are so many different industries where they actually need sort of scientists in a science background, aren't there?
Yeah, not everybody has scientist in their job title, but there are a lot of technical careers out there, people that need to know how things work, basically.
And of course, government agencies as well.
Exactly,
obviously have a big remit with regard to the environment and greater productivity in the UK, and all of these things need that type of R&D, don't they?
Absolutely. Yeah. It's not just universities and PhD students.
Now that we've talked at length about your role, I'm sure that we've actually inspired a number of listeners, and they're all really keen now to follow in your footsteps.
Oh, I hope so.
So for those that are, what sort of advice would you give them? Firstly, in terms of university selection, you actually did chemistry masters.
Yeah.
But is that what you'd recommend, or are there alternatives?
I chose chemistry, and there's plenty of other different routes to getting to university as well. I think I probably should have focused on physics if I was going to do engineering at university. And one of the things that I probably should have carried on with was maths, because I only did it at AS level. And as soon as I got to university, I needed to do extra courses to catch up with everybody else. So basically, there was no escaping maths, unfortunately.
Unfortunately, especially in the UK, maths basically at GCSE level is something that we can't escape. And, you know, we often say to youngsters who hate maths that it ought to be treated a bit like vegetables. You know, if you don't like maths, it's a bit irrelevant if you like it or not. You know, it's a means to an end. Just basically do it. And once you're over that hurdle, you never have to do it again if you don't want to. And what you were saying, Mike, is that the maths that you did actually was very relevant, because it was applied maths. It was maths applied to your subject, so it was a bit more interesting.
Exactly. Yeah, the course that I did at university was very much geared to science and specifically chemistry. Mm-hmm. So it was a lot easier to relate to problems that you had an understanding of, rather than just general algebra and trigonometry. That was a little bit more far out and harder to grasp.
And do people have to have a degree in order to enter your profession?
No, not necessarily. So there were people in my currently working in my department that started on apprenticeships. Actually, one of my colleagues started at the same time as me. And he started working in the lab and now works for the F1 team, going to all of the Grand Prix and doing fuels and lubricants testing as part of the trackside team. So he's definitely living the dream.
Lovely. Yeah, I can imagine. So, you know, from an educational or academic perspective, either you can make the choice of going to university or not going to university and doing an apprenticeship. In terms of sort of trying to find job opportunities, work experience opportunities, you know, we've mentioned already the types of employers, and there's many more types of employers than one would expect. But, you know, are there industry publications, organisations, societies, things like that people can go to find out more about careers in this field?
Yeah, absolutely. I think I'd recommend the Royal Societies, that kind of thing. So I'm a member of the Royal Society of Chemistry. There's for engineering, there's the Institute of Mechanical Engineering and Institute of Chemical Engineering as well. They have a lot of detailed case studies of careers. They have a lot of job listings as well in their magazines and on their websites. So I think that would be a good starting point for people to understand a bit more about what's going on. Yeah,
fantastic. And certainly from your perspective, doing that work experience right early on with Shell was really what set you on your path, wasn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
So we would heavily recommend that people do make these applications. And just because it's a massive company like Shell doesn't mean that one should be scared of making those applications, because everybody has to start somewhere, and these companies all need fresh, young talent, don't they, to come in and sort of fill the roles when people like you move on and, you know, up the ladder.
Absolutely, yeah. It was a great place to start because it is massive.
So, Mike, thank you so much. That really has been an eye-opener, and I'm sure that there are lots of budding scientists listening to us now. If they want to find out more about you or ask you some questions, is there a specific place that you would direct them to where they could contact you?
Yeah, sure. Just search for Michael G on LinkedIn. That's probably the best. You'll recognise me because I've got lots of hair.
Yep. I mean, you know, I wouldn't say you look like the mad scientist, not quite yet, but I could see how you could get there. Some lovely, brightly coloured socks you have on. And yeah, your lovely curly hair as well. You've damped it down a little bit, especially for this podcast.
Yeah. I've had it cut fairly recently. It's a bit more wild.
Mike, thank you so much indeed. That's been really very helpful. Thank you.
Thank you very much for having me.